Fascinating discussion with David Darling, the astronomer. And we'll be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, David Darling with us. David, of course, the big question, whether one agrees or believes in a single universe or the multiverses, how in the heck did it start?
Exactly. That's the or did it ever start? The origin of things is such a
jeez.
It almost blows your mind. You can't hear you. If it had a single point of origin, that's amazing. If it's always been there, that's amazing too. It's just one of those questions that whatever is the final solution, it's almost beyond belief.
Well, then you bring us into the equation as well. You know, these beings on this planet, thinking, breathing, eating, conscious. Religious, some not. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, you wouldn't predict it in advance, would you? If you had this sort of explosion and a universe came about, you wouldn't think that so many billion years later there would be us around. It is amazing. But the very fact that we do exist means that we ask that question. So there could be all kinds of universes out there in which there aren't intelligent beings, which can't even ask the question. So maybe it's a kind of a self-selecting thing in a way.
Do you have to bring God into the equation to try to solve some of this?
I don't think you have to from a logical point of view. I think that's a personal choice. I think it's not something that's really down to science. I have my own beliefs. They're not orthodox in any way, but I don't discount it. I think it's entirely possible that there is some sort of overall consciousness behind it all. But I don't think you need that. I think you can, there are ways for explaining it without a God, but of course you have to say, well, what is God? That's another question mark.
Of course.
In my mind, you know. So whatever God is, if it's some orthodox God like a Christian God or, you know, some other religious figure, or whether it's just some sort of creative force behind it all, you have to first of all say, well, what exactly do you mean by God? And then you can start to say, well, does that make sense? It makes sense. I don't have any problem with it, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary.
It's almost as if you have to stop trying to figure out the how and the why and just go with the flow.
Well, yeah, I think you have to go with the flow. That's pretty much what science does. It doesn't search for ultimate meanings. Why are we here? It just looks at what the heck's going on, basically. Assuming that it is here, how does it all work? And so science leaves options open to philosophy and religion to fill those gaps in the kind of higher questions, if you like.
Let's go to some of the phone calls. We'll go east of the Rockies, first of all. In Birmingham, Alabama. Welcome to the program, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hey, now. You know, Europa, it's going to be the next destination of interest, and I don't think we're going to be putting a lander up there, let alone a cryobot with these little Delta II sounding rockets we've been sending these little rovers to Mars with. Now, Elon Musk has this BFR MCT vehicle, but it's uncertain whether he can fund that, because it seems like he needs payloads, and the Air Force and United Launch Alliance is preventing that because they're trying to maintain a monopoly. And what that leaves us with is SLS, the Space Launch System, that I support more so, I must say, than Skylon. But folks who call themselves space advocates are just trying their damnedest to get it killed, and that just infuriates me. What can we do to get more folks to support a return to Saturn-class capabilities?
Okay, well, I suppose the question there is, first of all, do we want a manned spaceflight program? By we, I mean any nation or,
sure,
or international.
Do we
want to send people up there? Since humans came back from the moon in 1972, the furthest we've been is low Earth orbit, and we've got this very expensive, very impressive international space station. But what are we getting for the mega billions that have been spent on it? Now, I know there are people who are passionate about sending humans into space simply because we're explorers and we should be out there doing
right.
it. But we are not basically equipped to be in space. And if you're going to launch humans into space, you also have to launch a life support system, which is massively expensive. Now, the question is, if we had spent the money that we have spent on the International Space Station on robotic explorers, for example, to Mars, for example, to Europa and the outer solar system, we would be much further along scientifically than we are now. We wouldn't have guys up there in orbit. We wouldn't have this amazing engineering achievements, a huge human achievement. But what are we achieving in scientific terms? What are they actually doing up there that is repaying the hundreds of billions that have been spent on it? Consider we don't even have access to it now. Well, the U.S. doesn't even have independent access to it now. My view is that a lot of that money, until we can get our act together on a large scale, if that's what we want to do, we should be focusing more on robotic exploration, because I think we'd get more science for our buck that way.
More bang for the money, huh?
More bang for the money, yeah.
It's going to take something, I think, to make a big effort, a big change. But what about these other countries that are going to move ahead with their manned programs? China's going to go ahead with one.
There's only China, really, at the moment that has. And China is years, and I mean, they're basically tracking what the U.S. did decades ago.
Look how far ahead we were. God.
But the momentum was lost. Possibly because the reasons for doing it in the first place were not what people thought. The U.S. didn't go to the moon for science, as you know.
Well, they went to beat the Russians.
Well, that was the prime reason. Once you'd done that, then the motivation to carry on and repeat it again and again went. And once the public loses interest, then the politicians lose interest and the funding dries up. And ever since then, NASA has been looking for a new target. And the only target that it has beyond the moon is Mars, and Mars is 100 times further away. It's not easy to get there.
In the state of Washington we go. Hello, Ryan. Take it away.
And I'll tell you one thing, George. You're right about the stagnant ability of NASA nowadays compared to the Kennedy administration. I'll be quick here. My first question was about Europa, but I want to ask David about what is his idea of the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey. It was amazingly beyond its day in 1968. And I'll leave you guys, and you guys have a good night.
Okay, you too. What did you think of that?
2001, it's still my favorite.
A classic.
And the special effects have never been bettered. Of course, this is before there was, you know, computer graphics. This was all done using stage sets, and the way they captured weightlessness and life on a space station and space travel. And they got it. It was spot on. I mean, of course, they had some great science advisors on, Arthur C. Clarke and some people who really knew their science. So they made it look fantastic. It was an amazing show.
Did you understand it when it came out?
I don't think you're supposed to understand it in the sense that the ending is enigmatic.
Yeah.
I think it's left purposely open to interpretation, and that's good in a way, because it's mind-expanding. You know, interpret it this guy, he ends up in this old-fashioned kind of bedroom, and then he ages very quickly, and then he becomes a star child. You know, what are you to make of that? Well, that's the great thing about it. It leaves some of it to your imagination. If you read Clark's novel, then he kind of goes into more detail about what, you know, that it was really going on. But I just like it the way it was left that way. Absolutely true. And the other part of the question, Europa, yes, it's one of the places we should be looking for life. Unfortunately, that life is likely to be under the surface in this underground ocean. So getting at it is going to be tough. But we could at least send something to the surface to see what, sniff around on the surface, see if there's any sort of biologically interesting chemicals on the surface. That I would rather see us doing that right now than sending a big man ship to look at an asteroid, or I don't know. I don't see the that so many hundreds of billions are going to be thrown away on that, and we could be sending landers and robotic explorers all around the solar system, and then paving the way for human exploration that way. That would, to me, that makes more sense.
Well, it sure does. And didn't Space Odyssey leave Europa alone?
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah. Warning sign.
Maybe we should. Who knows, huh? Let's go next to Tristan in Aberdeen, New Jersey, on the wildcard line. Hi, Tristan. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question for your guest, David.
Sure. Go ahead.
It was maybe about an hour or so ago. You were advocating more security, I believe it was, and you were talking about the Faraday cages. Mm-hmm. And you specifically mentioned putting Faraday cages on the communication satellite.
No, I really meant around the ground-based equipment. I think, you know, the problem is if you start putting extra shielding around communication satellites, of course you increase the weight of them. So I don't have any. I was suggesting for ground-based equipment actually when I mentioned that.
Well, I know George was also in the Navy, and I don't remember what rate you were, but...
I was a full lieutenant.
A what now?
A full lieutenant. So I was a 03.
Okay. Well, I worked a lot with the communications guys, and my understanding was that Faraday cages completely cut off any sort of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how exactly that would be beneficial to put Faraday cages on the ground unit.
Well, you're talking about protecting things like transformers and
yeah.
stuff that has, you know, presumably, underground cables leading to it. So we're not talking about communication signals. I'm just talking about the power grid, but protecting the power grid, basically.
I've got to read that thing about Europa from Space Odyssey. It's so cool, David. But I got to get you to interpret it for us. All these worlds are yours except Europa. Attempt no landing.
Wouldn't it be funny if something worked out along those lines that it was, you know, prophetic in some way?
I wonder what they meant there. Somebody knew something, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's go back to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the program. You are on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Excellent. Outstanding. Am I almost George right now?
Yeah.
Wow. First, I'd like to say...
I didn't mention your name. I lost my screen. Blew up on me, so...
Josh Griffith. Oh, I apologize about that.
Josh. That's okay.
From Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm very honored to talk to you. I've listened to you for at least 10 years now. Amazing show tonight. First, I'd like to ask the guest about the researchers that have mysteriously disappeared or died in the deep field research. Also, if he has heard anything about the Black Knight satellite.
Okay, great. Yeah. Two good questions. First of all, David, we have had stories of a lot of scientists, astrobiologists, microbiologists, just dying strangely, committing suicide. Has that funneled down to you? Have you heard of that?
No, is the short answer. I need to follow that up. Do you have specific names or?
I don't have them with me right now, but there are like 30 to 35 of them.
It's really weird. Actually, I had an email from somebody about the Black Knight satellite the other day, and I actually had to Google it to find out what it was about. So those are two subjects that I have no information whatsoever about. But certainly the first one, the disappearance of those people. If I don't know if the caller has any specific names that I can lock in.
We'll try to get you a list.
Well, that would be fascinating. It's certainly nothing has reached me. I am in contact with a lot of astrobiologists and people in the field, and I think they would have given me the heads up if their colleagues were disappearing mysteriously. So I'd have to look into the background about that whole story.
Have you heard the story of the Black Knight satellite, where that specifically has to do with a 13,000-year-old, this is all conjecture, of course, 13,000-year-old satellite orbiting the Earth, which may have come from a star system called Epsilon Bootes?
Well, again, as I say, I got an email from somebody asking me for a sort of a heads up on this, and I had to reply saying because Black Knight to me was a rocket, was a Canadian rocket,
right.
that was used years and years ago. I thought he was talking about that at first, or some rocket in the past, and then I realized it was something completely different. But again, this is not something that's moved within my radar. So,
and the person who started the story some time ago, I think recanted it, but Google it. Just Google Black Knight satellite.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I'm going to get more questions about it, so I need to have some intelligent reply. I haven't heard anything about it.
K-N-I-G-H-T.
Got it.
Like Knights from the Round Table.
Yep, got it.
Let's go to Jimmy, truck driving in Louisiana, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Good, Jimmy. All is well.
Well, listen, I kind of have a humble, different take on all of this. I am not a religious man, but I believe in the Bible. And in the Bible, it's written that heaven is like a planet. There is trees, there is rivers, grass. He's building mansions. Now, when John had the vision that he went before the throne of God, there were four beings there. And he describes four different beings. So if we are human beings, that tells me that there are other places where there are other types of beings like we are. What is your take on that?
All right, that's Jimmy truck driving in Louisiana.
Okay, I always love these call-ins from the truck drivers. That's a great image I have. You know, we be sitting here in my living room talking.
And they keep America going, David.
Hey, I tell you, that's cool. It's the coolest call-ins. As you know, I'm not a Bible expert, and I don't pretend to be.
No.
So I guess it all comes down to interpretation of ancient scripts and what you make of it and how literally you want to interpret it. Now, if I read the Bible, then I know that some of it is more recent and some of it is older, and some of the older stuff is not based on, you know, it's allegory. It's often written in the form of pointing towards things, even metaphor, rather than to be taken literally. So I have to, when I, as a scientist, when I get questions like this, I have to say, what is the source of this information? Is it correlated with something else? If you believe literally in every word, then that's your personal position. I don't want to argue with that. But for me, I have to say, well, what exactly does this mean? You know, how is it referred to anywhere else? How are we to interpret things like this? So I would, if somebody says that, I go to the source and I say, where did this information come from in the first place? Before I even begin to decide if I want to believe in it or not. So that's kind of my view on that sort of thing.
David, when they turned the Large Hadron Collider back on at CERN,
yeah,
people have been scared that they could create mini black holes and gobble us up.
Well, that was a fear when they first turned it on.
Yeah,
of course.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Now, of course, they are in the process now of powering it back up. When it does power back up again over the next few months, it'll be running at twice the energy it was before. So we'll be producing particles with double the energy. So I suppose anybody who is worried about spin-off effects such as black holes or ruptures in space-time might be concerned again. But I can kind of reassure them in the sense that these sort of high-energy collisions take place in the atmosphere all the time when cosmic rays strike the upper atmosphere. Some of these cosmic rays have a lot more energy than anything that the Large Hadron Collider can produce, although it produces a lot more particles. You know, the overall energy is greater. But in terms of single particle energy, we already get these things from space, and they don't cause mini black holes, or at least they do. The black holes decay so quickly that they don't have chance to do any damage.
David Darling with us, and we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with him. And his website is daviddarling.info. It's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget, you can get to our website very easily now with just georgenori.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Darling, our very special guest, and we will be back with him in just a moment. David, what about the universe being destroyed? Is that possible?
Well, yeah, it's possible. One way it could happen, and it's nothing to lose sleep over, by the way. It's just kind of fairly speculative. But if the universe is in a higher energy condition, what we call a false vacuum state, in other words, although it looks as though it's settled and it's in a what we call a normal vacuum, if it's actually in a false vacuum state, in other words, it's more energetic than what we think it is, then it could be tipped into a lower energy state by some event. For example, a super energetic event. This is another a worry that some people have about the Large Hadron Collider, that it may actually produce such a focusing of energy at one point that tips the energy into it, tips the universe into a low energy state, and that would basically be the end of everything, because it would be the end of all natural laws. It would be the end of the universe as we know it. It is theoretically possible, but again, highly speculative.
It's speculative indeed. Let's go to some final calls now. Nick is in Brighton, Michigan. Welcome to the show, Nick. Go ahead.
Hey there, George.
Hi.
I was calling mainly because I recall David last hour stating that there's nothing quite unusual about placement of Earth relative to other planets, constellations in our galaxy. And yet I recall, I think it was Hugh Ross who declared that were Earth to be, astronomically speaking, slightly closer to the sun, we would cook slightly further from it. We would freeze. So then I, on hold, I was reviewing, I don't know if you've ever seen this catalog, Tools for Freedom, but they've got John Lear being interviewed by a fellow Shepard Ombilus of IntelliHub. Called CIA and NASA Black Ops Revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what your guest might think of what John Lear has apparently documented here relative to ETs and mining operations on the moon. And he declares that intelligent life already exists on other planets and moons within our solar system.
And they're incredible thoughts, and let's get your take on that, David. John Lear, of course, is the son of the founder of the Lear Jet Company.
Okay.
And he believes that the moon, for example, was towed into place,
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of things. But mm-hmm. go ahead.
Well, the question was in two parts. First of all, that the Earth is in a special location, and therefore possibly life or intelligence on planets is rare because they have to be in a location very similar to that of the Earth. If the Earth was closer or further away, then perhaps life would have been impossible. And yet the second part of the question is that perhaps intelligence is rife in that we can move moons around. It could be based on other planets and worlds in the solar system. So those two, in a sense, don't fit together very well. But I can't address the second part very much because I don't know too much about that, but I can address the first part, which is the location of the Earth. This is a sort of a spin-off of what we might call the rare Earth hypothesis,
right.
which is that although life might arise on a regular basis, intelligence or the further development of life is rare because circumstances on Earth were unique or very, very unusual. The fact is we don't know that. We don't know if the Earth had been slightly closer to the sun. Mars, for example, could have had life on it. We still believe that it may well have had life on it in the past. If the Earth was closer to the sun, would it have been too hot? Well, it depends. You can vary the parameters of the Earth as well. You can make it more massive or less massive. I think we fall into a trap of looking at the Earth, and if you want to believe that life is rare, you can say, well, it's special because the Earth's got a moon, and a funny big moon that's quite close to it, and it's in the middle of this habitable zone. It really depends upon what your philosophical view is and what the end point you want to find. For me, I think because we're finding all these locations, like, for example, Europa is a good example with an underground sea, and we're talking that maybe that has life in it, that Mars may have had life and may still have life still, especially below the surface. I don't think we should think of the Earth as being special. I think what we should think of is as opportunities for life to evolve in many different locations, in many different circumstances. And until we find otherwise, I think that should be our default position, rather than looking for reasons why the Earth is special.
David, you wrote a book called Teleportation some time ago.
Mm.
And are we any closer to teleporting anything?
Not on the scale of human beings or large objects. We're still working with particles. We're still working with, you know, electrons and photons and things at that end of the scale. There's been no great strides towards a sort of Star Trek style teleporter that, you know, where you can just transmit human beings from one place to another. At the moment, that lies far in the future. It may depend on developments in quantum computing, which are more likely to come, which will come first. Developments in quantum computing will happen over the next years and decades, and that possibly could lead on to further developments in teleportation. But we're not any further along being able to beam our way to Alpha Centauri or anything like that.
Okay, back to Steve in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Hey, Steve, thank you for holding.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Mr. Norrie. Good morning, Mr. Darling.
Good morning.
I can't shake this book by Zachariah Sitchin. It's a history book. It's not a science fiction book. And it's in the nonfiction section. It's not in the science fiction section. And what we have going on our planet right now doesn't feel like warming. I think we have a bigger pollution problem. It feels more like changing, like there's an earth change happening. And I think like we're being perturbed by something almost. And I've read where our magnetosphere is actually kind of being changed a little bit. And I even read where that's happening on other planets, where they're suffering from a form of like a global warming, you know? And so my question is, since I don't believe that we necessarily get all the facts from NASA or, you know, the professional astronomers, the people that can go out into space and do all the really cool things, is it possible for an amateur astronomer to look directly at the sun and see what's there? I just remember when that asteroid or comet or whatever it was that hit Russia, when it first happened, they reported they didn't see it coming because they can't look at the sun. And I'll take my answer up here.
Well,
thank you.
The sun does blot out things, doesn't it, David?
I'm not entirely sure what the question is. Can an amateur astronomer look directly at the sun, I think, was the question. Well, of course, the obvious answer is that you should never look directly at the sun with either your naked eye or through a telescope or binoculars. You're likely to be blinded if you do that. So I wouldn't recommend anybody even trying it. You can eclipse the sun. You can artificially eclipse the sun if you know how to do it. You just have to put a disc over it, basically. But then you will see what's surrounding the sun. You will see the outer atmosphere of the sun. Of course, that's what happens during a natural eclipse when the moon passes in front of the sun. I'm not quite sure that that's what the caller actually meant. And he was relating to the Russian meteor. I'm not familiar.
I guess it blotted it out. They couldn't see it.
Yeah, I don't know where that's leading. I don't think that is particularly relevant. That seems to be established that was a small asteroid that exploded in the atmosphere. I don't think anything to do with the sun or being able to see it or whatever. Don't look at the sun. Don't even attempt to unless you know what you're doing. The first part of the question had to do with global warming and questioning whether it was actually factually happening or other things. Well, whether you believe NASA or whatever, the fact is that of the past 14 years, the first 14 years of this century, 13 of the hottest on meteorological record. So it's hard to deny that we're warming up. I think the big question is what the cause is. We all have a different views on that. But I don't think the issue of global warming is, if you want to believe that global warming isn't happening, you may as well believe in a flat Earth, because it is happening. And there's no question about that.
Other planets are heating up too, correct?
No, that's not the case.
That's what we hear. Warmed-up solar system.
I'm not aware of that. I need to see the data on that. If somebody has any data they want to send me, then I'm open to that. That's not anything I've heard about. So, as an astronomer, it's not come through to me that. So I'm open to anything if people provide me where the source of information I can get to. You know, that's fine. But that's not something I'm familiar with. I do know that the Earth is warming up. There's no question about that.
Are they talking about insulating the grid at all in Britain, David?
In where?
Great Britain.
Oh, no. And for some reason, they seem to be less worried about it here than in the States. I don't know whether they've why that is. It's just that maybe the British stiff upper lip or something. I don't know what it is. But they seem to think that if something like that did happen, although it would be it would be severe, it would be something that we would get around. I don't know. This is a much smaller country, of course. You can get around it much easier than you can the States. So if we lost communications, we can get to each other faster. But I don't know if there's any special measures they're taking here. I very much doubt it, actually.
We've got Brett in Hot Springs, Arkansas, east of the Rockies now. Brett, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Starling.
Good morning.
Great show, very informative. Thank you. Do you see any projection for NASA to restaff adequately for new programs for Mars exploration and under the current administration, and what is your opinion on the impact of the cuts made? I'll take my I'll take it off the air, gentlemen. Thank you. God bless and God keep.
Sure. Well, this is not a very space-faring administration, David, here in the United States.
Well, no, it isn't. There's all sorts of issues going on here. But NASA's been underfunded for many years, even before that. And it seems that every new administration that comes in makes some grand promise about we're heading to Mars or the moon or we're going to capture an asteroid. But at the same time, the funding never reaches NASA that can make that possible, you know. And the emphasis always seems to be on manned space flight. You know, we're going to do some grand thing that is beyond the moon. We're going Mars is an often a target. At the moment, it's like, you know, capturing an asteroid or something to take a closer look at it, or returning to the moon. Certainly, the current administration has not shown any great enthusiasm for governmental funding of the program. They seem to be wanting to get the commercial sector more involved, but the commercial sector will only get involved if they see a profit. And, it's hard to make a profit out of space exploration, really, unless you start mining asteroids, and that's a huge
thing.
Right,
and diamonds.
Yeah. But the caller's question was, what about Mars? Well, it depends if you're talking about a manned Mars or unmanned Mars. The problem is that so much money has been taken out of NASA's science budget to keep the manned thing going, you know, future developments like the Space Launch System and this asteroid thing or going to Mars. The science budget has been stripped. So a lot of the robotic probes that would be bringing back exciting information from Europa, for example, or Mars sample return, have been put on hold or cancelled altogether. So we're not going to get any science back because we keep chasing these impossible manned goals with insufficient funding. And then, you know, you find out halfway through the program it gets cancelled, like the Constellation program got cancelled after billions were spent on it. Well, you know, that could have been used for funding some great robotic probes, which would have paved the way for manned missions in the future. So all these kind of promises are being made, but the funding never comes through in the end. Now, I'm not getting into who is to blame for that, whether it's the president or the Senate or whatever it is, but the funding doesn't reach NASA to fulfill the dreams that are expected of it.
All right, let's go to Derek in San Diego, first-time caller. Hi, Derek. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing? I feel real good to get on right now. I appreciate you over all these years. You and Art Bell.
Thank you.
And hello to you too, Mr. Darling. David, also. I'm calling, as I was getting on, I had a very kind of normal question when I told Tom, but all of a sudden these other types of questions came in my mind and ideas that I just wanted to pick your mind with a little bit, David, and you too, George. One of them is that, David, have you listened to Richard C. Hoagland? Do you know who he is?
I was on a show. I was on a show with Richard a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
I know Richard very well. Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yes, very cool. Very cool. George, you had a show with him a few months ago about China going to the moon and what they were seeing there, and you guys were just saying about an hour ago about that China can't put a man up there, and we were talking about then lately. David's been talking about, you know, unmanned flight to space and going through space. My question is there any way that we can get the space station? I don't understand. What is the space station about? If we have...
That's a good
question.
You know,
like, I never really did get it. I feel like it's kind of a novelty. It's kind of a, like, there's something, like, a few different things going on.
All right, let's get his reaction, only because we've only got about a minute or so left. What is the space station being used for, David?
It's being, in my view, you know, it's kind of a it's a big white elephant. I mean, they are doing science experiments in microgravity, growing crystals, doing stuff that relate to electronics. We can also study, long duration stays in space, the effects on human beings, which is valuable, but it has been done in the past. I'm not downplaying it. If the International Space Station was part of a much grander scheme where we were going to Mars and the Moon and we were doing, and it was massively funded on an international basis, I could see the point of it. But it is sucking so much energy and funding from other parts of the space program, particularly in the U.S., that
you keep looking, you think it's a wonderful achievement, it's amazing, and we have learned a lot from it. But in terms of the amount that has been spent on it, where can I look to new science, brand new science that has come about because of the space station in terms of the money that's been spent? And I don't see it. And it's hard to criticize because you think of these wonderful people that are behind it. It's one of the greatest achievements of humankind to put this thing up there. But what have we actually got back from it? If we'd sent probes to Europa, to Mars, even into interstellar space, instead of spending hundreds of billions, I think that would have been smarter, really.
Yep. David, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day out there in Great Britain, okay?
Thank you, George.
David Darling, his works, of course, all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.